We actually dig into the data. For example, we find out that home care workers make significantly less than PSWs working in other settings, so in hospital or long-term care homes. And in fact, all the concerns that we might have about low-wage workers in other settings are actually worse in the context of home care. So, yeah, I think it's easier for people to ignore. It's not as immediately visible, but it's in fact perhaps even more crucial.
Yeah, you talk about in your report many PSWs who spoke about health and safety risks they face while working alone in clients' homes. What were some of the most pressing safety concerns that came up?
Yeah, so I think a lot of the health and safety risks are related to the fact that people are working in private homes by themselves. So this type of work is physically demanding, it's emotionally exhausting. So some of the health and safety risks were just related to the realities of the jobs that they're doing. So high risk of injury, mental health, impacts of working with people who are often in the process of dying. But on top of that, they also experienced hazards in people's homes. They experienced clients that are, were violent in some cases, especially those that were in some stage of dementia, had conditions related to dementia. So perhaps they didn't know what they were doing, but nonetheless, this resulted in women talking about being hit, being kicked, being yelled at, when they're simply there to try and help make people's days go a little smoother and a little happier in some cases. And in addition to that, unfortunately, there were a lot of experiences of anti-Black racism and discrimination, along with sexism that people experienced. So being called maids was very common, even though, within their care plan, there's a very specified list of tasks that they're being hired to pay. Many of these women are, in fact, trained as highly skilled nurses in their home countries, but haven't been able to transfer their credentials to do PSW labor. And of course, regardless, that's an unacceptable way, term to use for people who are providing health services. But in addition to that, yeah, there were racist slurs. There were people, not allowing workers to use their bathrooms, denigrating them for their services, really awful cases. So these were obviously extremely troubling experiences for the women. And a lot of times, unfortunately, when they spoke to their employers, suitable solutions were not found. So, in one case, a woman talked about being asked to continue working for the same client for 2 more weeks because they didn't have anyone else to replace her. And when she declined, no supports were provided, no kind of counseling services, and she wasn't able to receive compensation for her time, when she stopped working.
You've already listed a couple anecdotes, but was there a particular conversation or experience you heard that stuck with you when you were doing this work?
Well, one of the themes that we highlight in the report is the fact that personal support workers are subsidizing the home care system with their unpaid labor. And all of these anecdotes, specifically related to travel time, really stood out to me that the nature of working in people's private homes means that commuting from place to place to place is obviously a component, an essential component of the job. And it was just really shocking to me to hear that these women were either undercompensated or, in some cases, not compensated at all for their travel time. And considering this is already low-wage job, precarious work, and it meant that for some women, they were working, they had 4 clients a day with long hours in between where they just weren't paid. They weren't even being paid full-time wages for work that was necessarily full-time. I guess maybe I knew that from previous readings, but just kind of hearing them talk about just sitting in the snow waiting for the next client or missing a bus and then, not being able to be compensated for their travel time, just things really outside of their control that they are being penalized for. That was really upsetting and kind of shocking to me. And just to hear it again and again and again, this isn't just one outlier. This is kind of just the status quo in these types of jobs.
I wonder, there was a bill that was passed in 2022 by the province that sent patients to nursing homes after getting discharged from hospitals to free up space. But the bill got a lot of heat because it was sending patients to locations not of their choosing, far distances away, and they'd be charged if they refused to move. Did that change, like, how many personal care workers were entering the industry, or maybe have an impact on some of these working conditions?
Well, I think anytime we're kind of directing patients or people in recovery to institutions rather than their homes, it really makes no sense from a system level. And that's because, first of all, it costs us, society as taxpayers, so much more money to have people in these institutions that are already overburdened and understaffed. But on top of that, it also is against the client's wishes. When you talk to elderly people, people with disabilities, people recovering from injury, these individuals overwhelmingly would prefer to stay in their home. Aging in place, aging with dignity. People want to be at home because they're familiar there, they're comfortable there, they have their community and social networks. We hear time and time again that they're healthier and happier when they're able to stay in their homes. This is a win-win solution, right? This is a low-cost solution for society that also leads to happier, healthier individuals. And when we talk to the PSWs, they're very much aware of this. They have close relationships with their clients and they see how, when they get adequate hours of care at home, their clients are able to, live longer, healthier, happier lives. And they like working in the community. They like building those relationships, but it's just so unfair that they are penalized. They're paid less money, they have less employment benefits, less job security, lower levels of unionization, simply because this work is being done in a community setting rather than in an institution. So it makes no sense from a financial perspective, from a health-based perspective, from a kind of social justice perspective, from a community perspective. It boggles the mind. When policies like that are put in place, it's pretty clear that it's for ideological purposes rather than evidence-based purposes. Private companies are making a lot of money off of, for-profit institutions in healthcare, and it really sends a message that those are the voices that are impacting policy decision makings, which of course is really troubling from a policy perspective, a social justice perspective, just an equity perspective.
Of course, your report is focused on immigrant, racialized women, these workers. But when, workers aren't fairly compensated or they're facing these conditions where maybe they don't feel necessarily safe coming into work, what impact does that have, like, on the clients, and being able to continue delivering this kind of service?
Well, we see high levels of turnover in the sector. And, continuity of care is another thing that health research suggests is so important to people, living their best lives. So my research is not really focused on the perspective of clients. There's lots of people doing that work, and that's really important. But one thing I would note is that in these interviews, it was very clear that the PSWs saw their clients as really important allies in the struggle to improve home care. So, as much as they raised negative experiences and interactions, overwhelmingly, they saw home care clients as being allies, as being people that were equally committed to making the system work better.
Yeah, so there seems to be a disconnect there. We want to reduce pressures on hospitals, emergency departments. If there is a need, why aren't these services better funded? So what can be done about this? How might employers or policymakers better protect these workers?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think a real strength of this report, something I'm really proud of, and something that was important to me, was that it's not just descriptive, it's also prescriptive, right? Very detailed policy recommendations that are targeted to both levels of government, to employers, as well as to unions. So we're not just, complaining about a problem that most people are aware of who are in the sector, we're also saying here are really specific things that can be done. So we really focus our suggestions on kind of three key areas. The first is really focused on ensuring fair compensation, secure employment, and protection for home care PSWs. And here it's really the provincial government that needs to take a leading role. This means increasing funding, modernizing the home care funding model. So moving away from this fee-for-service model that really doesn't work effectively in home care, and just increasing funding towards public, not-for-profit home care. The second area we focus on is really transforming the system as a whole to support good working conditions for PSWs and also high-quality care for Ontarians that require this type of care. And here, everything we see says that, first of all, public, not-for-profit care provision leads to higher quality care. And also, to me, it just seems obvious that taxpayer dollars should 100% go towards funding our system rather than creating private profit, in the pockets of wealthy corporation owners. So creating a comprehensive public nonprofit home care system and an end to private profit in the publicly funded home care system, we see as just kind of an essential non-negotiable going forward. And finally, we do focus on building the collective power of home care PSWs. So by best estimates, rates of unionization for home care PSWs are between 30% and 37%. And we see much higher rates for PSWs in long-term care homes and hospitals. And as I've said, a lot of this is related to the location of care, right? The fact that it's harder to collectively organize when people are not working in the same place. But we suggest that there are steps that can be taken. We need the provincial government to reform labor laws to improve access and reduce barriers to unionization for home care PSWs. And we need the labor movement to dedicate more resources to organize with home care PSWs, specifically putting racialized immigrant women in leadership positions. Because, it's PSWs themselves that know best what is the most essential change, that have the most connections with each other, and that are most dedicated to reforming and improving the system. So, I mean, that's just an overview. We have much more detailed recommendations in the report. And again, I urge people to read them and to share them. If anything, I just see that as equally as important as our kind of identification of key issues from the interviews that we did. These recommendations come from the interviews with the women, as well as from the literature and from kind of combing any sort of data we could find. And that's another point. It was so hard to get data on home care workers, like quantitative generalizable statistics. And I tend to think like the challenge in getting data is by design. People have vested interests in us not actually knowing, what proportion of PSWs in home care are in, public versus for-profit institutions.
Naomi, I want to thank you for your time and your insights. This is a very important report. I'm glad we had time to talk about it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me and for, your interest in this work.
Naomi Lightman is a professor of sociology at Toronto Metropolitan University. Her recent report is called Caring About Care Workers, Centering Immigrant Women Personal Support Workers in Toronto's Home Care Sector. The report is in collaboration with the nonprofit Social Planning Toronto. This has been your community news update from Met Radio CJTM 1280 AM in downtown Toronto. Our music is produced by Robert Johnston. None of this coverage would have been possible without the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. I'm Mia Johnson.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. as this station is run almost entirely by volunteers. You have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs, interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
Once again, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. This is Danny Nesvetterani for your 10 a.m. hour of Speak Up. We have about 15 minutes left in the hour. Coming up right at 11 a.m. is Democracy Now!, but I just want to reiterate the PSA that you just heard. But volunteering here at CJSF, you know, as the in-house journalist here, I'm not the only one doing journalism work and interviews and public affairs and talk content and things like that. It is very much open to anyone that wants to get involved. Currently, we have a editorial meeting every Wednesday at 2 p.m. We're going to be closed for a little bit during the holidays, but come January, Wednesdays, 2 p.m., we all meet at the station in the couch lobby area, and we talk about the stories we're working on throughout the week. No experience required. We are here to support. And if there's any sort of interesting stories that you found in your community, whether it has to do with public transit or immigration or any number of issues or things going on in your community that you want to report on and that you want to provide a platform for, please reach out to us, because we're always looking for new stories and we're always looking to put a microphone to the metaphorical mouth of the community, for lack of a better term. Anyways, just one example of some of the reporting we do here. Here's a piece that I produced recently. It was played yesterday, but I thought I would play it again. This is about a new agreement made with the BC government to improve conditions for senior care workers. I spoke with Kaylee Frampton, who is an employee with the Hospital Employees Union. Please take a listen. Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvetterani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On December 1st, the BC government announced that over 5,000 unionized long-term care and assisted living workers will transition to the province-wide facilities collective agreement over the next 2 years. This agreement is being made between the Hospital Employees Multi-Union Facilities Bargaining Association, the Health Employers Association of BC, and the Province of BC, aiming to improve fairness for workers and stability within seniors' care. To learn more about this agreement and what it signifies for the BC long-term care industry, we reached out to the Hospital Employees Union for an interview. We were able to get in contact with Kaylee Frampton, coordinator of policy and planning at the union, who was able to provide some background on the changes being made through this collective agreement.
We did an announcement with government on Monday, and you know, this is something that's really big for seniors care in British Columbia, but also for HEU members. And this is something that we negotiated as part of our tentative agreement. It's not yet approved, but it's something that our members will be able to vote for in December. But we announced that what government is doing is really rolling back some of the really damaging policies that impacted healthcare and seniors care in the early 2000s. So I'm going to tell you a bit of history here. You know, in the kind of late 90s, the long-term care sector, seniors care, was really, with just a few exceptions, all workers were kind of under a main collective agreement. And so that really meant that there were lots of standards around the care that was provided for seniors, lots of stability in the sector and job security for folks. And then in the early 2000s and, you know, kind of right up until the end of the mandate that the BC Liberals had. They were introducing pieces of legislation that allowed for kind of contracting out of the sector, which led to a lot of privatization. And then also they allowed people to leave the main collective agreement and leave the Health Employers Association of BC. So it meant that we saw like a lot of care homes at the time become under private operators. And so that system has kind of expanded over the years. And, you know, HU has gone back and organized a lot of that sector and a lot of those care homes where there was new contractors, for example, so they weren't always unionized. But over the years, that's really led to a system where you could have a worker working at one care home being paid, for example, $7 an hour less than someone working at one of the public care homes that was under our main HU collective agreement. So it just led to a system that was really different across the and inequitable across the system. And so what we are announcing in this as part of this tentative agreement is that we're going to be bringing approximately 5,000 workers back into the main facilities agreement through a process over the course of a couple years that will mean that people will get across the board same pension and benefits. And so that's really, really huge for folks in the sector. So that's what we were announcing on Monday.
In a media statement released by the union, the union secretary business manager Lynn Buchert is quoted as saying, "This agreement is an important step towards restoring a level playing field for working and caring conditions in provincially funded seniors care homes, getting labor standards back to what existed before 2002. We asked Frampton to explain what this statement signifies.
So I think the main thing really was that the workers were primarily all under this same collective agreement. So it really made a difference in terms of equalizing the sector. Like, it just meant you got a job at a seniors care home and you knew what you were going to be paid and you knew that you would have a pension. And it also meant that, you know, if there was two care homes on a street, if you went to work at one, it would be the same at the other one. There wasn't like competition in between them. And as you can imagine right now, we're in a recruitment and retention moment where it's really hard to recruit healthcare workers and keep them. And so having these kind of same standards across the board will make it easier too for ultimately for operators to keep people in one place. And also all of that is so, so important for seniors who, you know, for some of them, like these facilities are their homes. And, you know, our members do this, like the important care work of brushing their hair, spending so much time with them. Kind of everyone has a story of someone that they know that's been in long-term care and knows how kind of important these workers are. They're like family to people. So making sure that there's like consistency and stability there is so, so important. And, you know, that was really undone by the Liberals. You know, they kind of took that apart. So we're trying to slowly kind of repair and rebuild that system. And this is one of the ways that we were able to do it was in doing this through our bargaining process.
Lastly, Kaylee Frampton gave us a personal account from one of the organization's members, highlighting the improvements for worker security that this new agreement will achieve.
Well, I just want to also share a story from one of our members that was at the announcement with us. Her name is Adel, and she works at a care home in Vancouver here. And she kind of shared that, you know, in, I believe it was 2003, her facility was contracted out. And so that meant that they all got pink slips, like, in a day. And she went from being someone who had a pension and really good benefits to having no pension and getting her pay slashed like by 35% kind of overnight. And then she's still working at this care home. And so, but in between then, the contract was flipped twice, which meant that all the workers got fired, and then they go through a process of getting rehired. And just a couple years ago, because of some other circumstances, the workers there were brought back into the our kind of main collective agreement, the facilities agreement, and now she has a pension. But, and you know, the benefits are a lot better. But you know, this is someone who was kind of robbed 20 years of a pension, and you know, Filipina caregiver, care worker, who you know, this is like a really terrible injustice that was really impacting mostly women and racialized workers. And, you know, it's really crappy. She's not going to be able to get that pension and earn and all that earned time back, you know, but this change will mean that her coworkers and that more people moving forward will have access to that historical moment for our union, and really something that we're so proud of, that we were able to do this.
Once again, that was our conversation with Kaylee Frampton, the coordinator of policy and planning at the Hospital Employees Union, explaining the agreement that has been made between the union, the Health Employers Association of BC, and the province of BC, which aims to improve fairness for workers and stability in seniors' care. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. Once again, we are back with Speak Up only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you all so much for tuning in this hour. Make sure you stay tuned. We have Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman right at 11 a.m. And with that, I have one last song for all of you today, this morning. This is coming from Handsome Tiger, a local DJ, producer, musician, artist, with his track, Like Water. Once again, thank you for tuning in, and hope you enjoy. Thank you.